It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Over the decades, the city of Pittsburgh has seen its share of sports heroes and Hall of Famers, most notably Roberto Clemente, Franco Harris, and Mario Lemieux. Not as much seems to have been written, though, about the late Pirate slugger Willie Stargell, although he certainly rivals their star power. Now, the 1979 National League MVP and Pirates' all-time home run leader is the subject of a new book called Pops, The Willie Stargell Story. The author is Richard Pete Peterson, a Pittsburgh native now residing in Illinois. He joins us by phone from there. Richard Pete Peterson, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thanks for having me on the program.
Even though he hit the game-winning home run in Game 7 of the 79 World Series, because he played in Pittsburgh with so many sports greats, does Willie Stargell's name sometimes get lost in the conversation?
It's almost as if sometimes he's taken for granted, but he was such a legendary figure in Pirate sports history. I mean, he's so well-known and so well-loved and respected. It's just hard to imagine that at this point in time there haven't been books written about him. But there's no doubt that he is one of the legendary figures in Pittsburgh sports history, and probably up there with figures like Art Rooney in terms of being one of the most beloved figures in Pittsburgh sport history. Steve Blass said one time that there was no small hugs from Willie Stargell, and Stargell, some others, seemed to embrace an entire city during his career.
The love for Willie Stargell didn't necessarily materialize in the early to middle years of his career, but toward the end of it, as he began to be called Pops, as he got on in his years and was older than many of the players on the team, things began to change. People began to look up to him. What happened there?
Well, he struggled early on, much in the way that Pedro Alvarez has been struggling for the Pirates. When he first came to the Pirates, he had trouble controlling his weight. He had trouble hitting left-hand batters. He struck out far too much. And so there's a feeling that that he wasn't necessarily a complete ball player during that period of time. So it took him a long while to develop as a ball player. He also played on a team with Roberto Clemente and Bill Mazeroski, so he didn't really need to be that kind of clubhouse presence during the 1960s. But after Clemente's tragic death and after Mazeroski's retirement, then he became more and more of a factor in the clubhouse and became more the emotional leader of the team during the period of the 1970s. And he also matured as a ball player. He became more of a complete ball player, which in some ways is remarkable because he had such physical courage. He played on knees that had undergone surgery several times, and the trainer Tony Barterman once called him bone on bone. So he matured as a ball player. He had his greatest season perhaps in 1979, and he was 39 years old at the time and playing on bad knees.
If it hadn't been for that 79 season, with the whole culture of Sister Sledge and the We Are Family song and Willie Stargell passing out the stars, and of course, not only in a leadership role, but excelling on the field as the league MVP and later the World Series MVP. If it hadn't been for that season, would he be a worthy book subject? Would he be in the Hall of Fame?
He would be in the Hall of Fame. He played at Forbes Field throughout the 1960s. It was such a huge ballpark and such a challenge for a left-handed batter like Willie Stargell with straightaway power that his numbers really didn't add up in the way that they added up for Nerdy Banks, who was playing at Wrigley Field, for example, or Stan Musial, who was playing at Sportsman Park, these small ballparks. But when the Pirates moved to Three Rivers in 1970, the season after that, his first full season at Three Rivers, he hit 48 home runs. In April, he had broken the major league record for a home run, and he did it in June, and he did it in July. And if he hadn't had those bad knees, he would have probably broken Babe Ruth and Roger Maris's record during that time. And playing in Three Rivers Stadium, he hit more home runs in the decade of the 1970s than any ball player in the major league. So he certainly deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. But that 79 season is the stuff of legends. I mean, everything just came together, and the Stargell Stars and the We Are Family theme, all that just played right into it, and it made him seem even larger than he actually was. He became almost mythic, almost like a Paul Bunyan of baseball.
We're talking with author Richard Pete Peterson, whose new book is called Pops, The Willie Stargell Story. What were some of the obstacles Willie Stargell overcame early in his life and professional career?
Well, you have to begin with the racial issue. He played in the minor leagues at a time when life was very difficult for black ball players. He didn't play in the Deep South. He didn't endure what Hank Aaron and Billy Williams and others endured, but he did play in the Southwest early in his minor league career, and he went through all the conditions that you read about. He played on the same field with white ball players, but he lived with black families. He had to eat in the back of the restaurant, or if the restaurant wouldn't allow him to come in, he would have to wait on the bus until his teammates brought food out to him. So he endured all that, and then in the very first year in the minor leagues in New Mexico, it was in Plainfield, Texas, he was walking to the ballpark, and someone stepped out behind a bush with a shotgun and told him that if you play tonight, and he used that N-word, and he said, I'm going to kill you. And I think that was the turning point for Stargell. He realized that he was going to be a major league ball player, and nothing was going to stop him at that point. So race was an issue that he was aware of very early in his career. But he wasn't like Roberto Clemente. Clemente was sort of Pittsburgh's Jackie Robinson. You know, he played with pride and aggressiveness, and became a spokesperson for a number of causes. Stargell was more like Willie Mays. He had a self-deprecating sense of humor. He was more a hugger than someone who like Clemente, remained aloof. And in 1968, after the assassination of Martin Luther King, he became a leader in the black community at that time. Brought a chicken franchise on the Hill, which became rather famous. Became a leader in the cause in the struggle against sickle cell anemia. So he was very much aware of race and very much involved in racial issues. But he was a unifier. He brought people together, especially in Pittsburgh.
Growing up in Pittsburgh, I can remember the voice of the Pirates, Bob Prince, yelling "Chicken on the Hill with Will" every time Willie Stargell hit a home run. You want to explain that and how that contributed to Willie Stargell's folk hero status in Pittsburgh?
Right, again, it all adds up to a kind of myth presence. Stargell bought a chicken franchise, bought a restaurant that was part of a chicken franchise owned by Brady Keyes, which might ring a bell for Pittsburgh Steelers fans. He was a defensive back for the Steelers, and Brady Keyes owned a chicken franchise, and Stargell bought one of the stores and set it up in the Hill District. When Bob Prince found out about it, when Stargell would come up in critical situations, he would say, "Spread some chicken on the Hill, Will," because anybody in the restaurant, when Stargell hit a home run, received free chicken. And it backfired on Prince, because one night, it was the bottom of the ninth, the Pirates desperately needed a home run, and Prince said, "I'll pay for the chicken on the Hill if Will hits a home run." He hit a home run. Everybody in the vicinity running for the restaurant, and Stargell the next morning handed him a bill for $400 for all the chicken that was spread on the Hill that night.
We're talking with Richard Pete Peterson, the author of a new book called Pops, The Willie Stargell Story, here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Richard, as I mentioned at the outset, you're a Pittsburgh native, but you live now in the Midwest.
Yes.
And so, for you, what was it like to approach the Willie Stargell story? Because he was someone that, particularly as he became this heroic figure in the late 70s, you were living in another part of the country. You as a child, went to Forbes Field and saw people like the great Ralph Kiner in person. Uh-huh. You saw Roberto Clemente play. But Willie came later. So what was it like for you as you were writing this book to try to connect in a very real way with the Willie Stargell story?
Well, it was a great opportunity. I saw my first Pirate game in 1948. Kiner was a great hero at that time. The first game that I saw, Danny Murtaugh was playing second base for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I followed him through those dismal 50s. I was in Pittsburgh when Mazeroski hit his home run. So I saw Clemente play. I saw Mazeroski play, Kiner. They were all great heroes. I did see Stargell play before I left Pittsburgh. I actually saw him hit one of his home runs over the roof at Forest Field against Tom Seaver. But I never really felt as close to Stargell as I did with Clemente and Mazeroski and Kiner, and even Hannes Wagner and Pye Trainer, who were walking the streets when I was growing up in Pittsburgh. So it was a wonderful opportunity to get to know him, to understand why he was such a larger-than-life figure in Pittsburgh, why he was so beloved by so many people. When I started to talk to his former teammates on the phone, it was just amazing, you know, the respect they had for them, the love that they had for him. You know, Jim Rooker said that he never made speeches, but he was there. And he said he'd just say a few words and you were willing to run through fire for him. Al Oliver said that you could trust him. You could tell him anything about your professional life, your personal life, and it never went beyond that conversation. Tony Bartiromo, who also grew up in Pittsburgh, said that he would give me $1 million if I found someone who would say something bad about Stargell, and I don't have that $1 million, so Tony's money is safe.
Willie Stargell was a beloved figure in Pittsburgh, and yet when someone reads this book, they're going to learn some things that are surprising, one of which is that there was a time after Willie Stargell's playing career, after he had done so much for the team and for the city, that he was actually booed on the field at Three Rivers Stadium. Can you describe the circumstances of that?
Well, he retired in 1982, and he became kind of a goodwill ambassador for the Pirates. They were struggling going into the mid 1980s, and they asked Stargell to come back as a coach for Chuck Tanner. And of course, Stargell was willing to do anything to help out the Pirates, and so he took the field as the coach. But in 1985. The Pirates changed ownership, and they fired Chuck Tanner. And, of course, they also released all the coaches, one of whom was Willie Stargell. Now, Willie Stargell, at that point, was interested in becoming a manager. He was happy to get that experience coaching the Pirates. He thought perhaps they would turn to him to manage the Pirates, but at that point they selected a rather obscure individual nobody had heard of in Pittsburgh named Jim Leland. When Tanner took the managing job in Atlanta, Stargell, again, who wanted the experience, stayed on as a coach with Tanner in Atlanta. So for the first time in his career, he left Pittsburgh, and he went to Atlanta as a coach. This is the 25th anniversary of Stargell's induction into the Hall of Fame. In 1988, the Pirates, who had already had two Willie Stargell days, wanted to have a third Willie Stargell day before the induction. And Stargell said no, because he had already had two, and he was unhappy with the way things had ended with the Pirates. What happened was the rumor started to spread that Stargell wanted a car, he wanted all sorts of things before he would agree to this. And those stories circulated in the paper so that when Stargell came to Forest Field in an Atlanta Braves uniform and walked into the coaching box, they booed him. Tanner was absolutely devastated. He said, how could they boo Willie Stargell? To Stargell's credit, and it shows you the grace of the man, when he gave his induction speech just a few months later, he praised Pittsburgh and praised Pittsburgh fans. He said nothing about this incident at that time.
That's just one of the stories in the new book, Pops, the Willie Stargell Story, by our guest, Richard Pete Peterson, the author of this new book. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about, it is to many people's great surprise that Babe Ruth never managed in the major leagues, and neither did Willie Stargell, even though he was such a great leader. What kind of a manager, from the research that you did and the people that you spoke with, what kind of a manager do you think Willie Stargell would have been?
I think we had one already in Pittsburgh. I think he would have been very much like Danny Murtaugh. I think he would have simply been a manager of men by his presence. Murtaugh knew men. He knew how to manage men on a baseball field. Stargell learned from Murtaugh and learned from Chuck Tanner as well. He probably would have had a little bit of Tanner's spiciness, but I think his core values were similar to Murtaugh. I think he would have been the same sort of manager, a manager who sort of lets his players play. Doesn't put pressure on them. Just expects them to go out and do their job. They create the impression that they're not doing very much, but they're in control of things. They know exactly what they're doing. And I think Stargell would have been cut in the mold of the Danny Murtaugh.
even though he never got that chance and died at a young age, what would you say Willie Stargell's legacy is?
I think his legacy is that he's such a positive force in the history of Major League Baseball. He lived for baseball. He was an ambassador for the game. I think he's also a great figure in the history of Pittsburgh sports because the city meant so much to him. If you go out to PNC Park and you look at the Stargell statue, around the statue, engraved around the statue, are the words that Stargell said when he first arrived in Pittsburgh. He drove from Columbus with Bob Veal. They went through the Fort Pitt Tunnel at night, and when they got on the other side of the tunnel, the city was there. All the lights were on, and he said he felt that the city was reaching out to him, was welcoming him, ready to embrace him. Those words are encircled around Stargell's statue, and, of course, at the base are sprinkled all those Stargell stars. So he just embraced the city. He brought so many people together in a world where there's so much divisiveness and so much disgruntledness and disagreement. He was just the opposite in the way that he dealt with people and the way that he brought people together. So just a great ambassador for the game, a great presence, considering all the troubles that baseball's having these days. He was a power hitter, a slugger of prodigious home runs, and didn't need steroids to do it. And to show you how respected he was, when he was elected to the Hall of Fame in 1988, he was the 200th player to be elected. He was the 17th to be elected on the first ballot. Joe DiMaggio wasn't elected on the first ballot. Pye Trainer wasn't selected on the first ballot. Dizzy Dean wasn't selected on the first ballot, but Willie Stargell was. And you'd have to go back to 1942 to find the first one, or 1946, I believe, to find the first one. And that was Jackie Robinson and Bob Feller. I'm sorry, 1962. They were the first players elected on the first ballot, Jackie Robinson and Bob Feller. So he was just a beloved figure, and again had the credentials. Was one of the great power hitters in the game, and one of the great personalities to ever play sports in Pittsburgh.
Richard Pete Peterson is the author of a new book about Willie Stargell called Pops, The Willie Stargell Story, joining us by phone from Illinois. Pete Peterson, thank you so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. To hear any part of this program that you might have missed or any of our past shows, just go to our website at wesa.fm. Until next time, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening.